Hard Edge, a gripping book depicting the real life of Conrad Loxton. The book explores his journey from a shocking childhood to life in Britain's criminal underground. Bouncer, enforcer, A-list bodyguard and fifth Dan karate black belt. But who is the real Conrad Loxton? In a series of interviews, this podcast endeavours to find out. So we're back again, and it's been a few weeks now since the initial six episodes went out of this podcast. How are you feeling about everything? How's the reaction been to it?
I've had some pretty good positive feedback from other people. So yeah, good, I guess.
So because I feel like when we stopped talking, we ended on a bit of a hype, really, and we talked about the L word, and we talked about love and the fact that
you're a knob.
and so it begins, and so this is where the name calling starts. But we did, and I think as well, you know, you were surprised that we talked about things that you didn't think we were going to talk about. You know, I remember very clearly you saying, usually when people have a chat with me, they want to know about the celebrity side of stuff, they want to know about, you know, me being a bodyguard, etc. Whereas actually what we touched on was away from that, because for me, what I wanted people to get to know was who you are, not the bravado and everything that goes around it.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. And that's why I was wondering, like, how it kind of made you feel afterwards. Did it feel the same as writing the book, or did it feel quite different?
Just totally uncomfortable. Both, to be honest, the book and the podcast are totally out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. So. But you still sat here and you're still smiling and you're still wanting to do more. And
That's a painful grimace. That's not a smile.
So what was very apparent to me, and when people have been listening to it, was how much people wanted to hear more, and they wanted to know more. They wanted to find out what happened next. There was a message that did come in, who one of the most poignant things he took from it was the autism side of stuff. And the reason being was because when he was listening to this podcast, he related in so many different ways. And when you touched on the diagnosis, he kind of felt a bit of a weight lift and was a bit surprised, because he then sort of felt that he might actually have a purpose to go and get checked himself.
That's a positive. That's pretty good to hear, actually.
It is, isn't it?
I think, though, people worry too much about diagnosis. It gave me some clarity into what was wrong with me. But to be perfectly honest, nothing's really changed. I just know why I'm a bit weird now. It makes me understand why I get bloody weird with certain things when other people don't seem to. So
yeah, let's go back then. I think we kind of got to the point where you were married, but I think we need to go back further than that, because you are about 21, right? Yep. So if we just sort of have, if we can just sort of...
I was married at 21.
You were married at 21. And you were saying that you'd moved back down to Wales, hadn't you?
Yeah.
At that point. So what happened after that then? You were living in Wales, you were together. We can go over this again.
So we're living in South Wales, recount it. Doing all sorts of shit jobs, starting to get into situations, if you like. Nothing was really changing. We were living to sort of get paid on Friday, skint again by Monday. Nothing really improving, nothing getting better. And then we got married. And then I think it was 4 months after we got married, we moved away. We were going to travel. We were looking to go around South America, etc. And then we moved back to where my wife's family are from, with a view to kind of go there for a few weeks, get our stuff in order, and then travel. We went back, got our stuff in order, and stayed there 15 years, didn't travel. One of her relatives got very sick, died. I think we did talk about that, actually.
We did, yes.
And then we found out she was pregnant.
And that is when your whole sort of outlook on life really changed, didn't it?
It got complicated.
So what happened then? Because You haven't really sort of touched on the point where you were a bodyguard for people. You were, you know, you have worked with celebrities and stuff like that. Where does that come into stuff?
When we were living where my wife's family are from, I was teaching martial arts as well as doing other jobs. Ended up getting asked to do a corporate training day, which I did. And then it was a bit of a surprise to me at the time. The guy that asked me to do it seemed surprised that I could handle myself. And then he's like, can you do some sort of bodyguarding work for me? And it turns out it was for a shady businessman. And it kind of went from there. It just grew.
Right, okay. So it did start off on the kind of underground kind of level in a way.
I wouldn't say underground. He was a dick, to be perfectly blunt. He asked me to look at doing a little bit of security work for him. He had a very good talent for trouble. He was a gobshite. He was a bit of a con man. And I started doing various jobs for him. And then it kind of picked up from there.
How did you feel about doing that? Did your wife know that this was what you were doing? Or is this something did you lie? What did you do?
Well, no, I wasn't doing anything dodgy. I was trying to stop people kicking his head in. So, you know, I was getting really good money for doing it. I was driving around with him. I was getting fed. I was getting expenses. I was getting more money than I should have been doing for what I was doing. And people tend to leave him alone when I was there. So it wasn't a problem. And it kind of grew from there. It went from looking after him to then being loaned out to mates, and then I eventually started working for somebody else. And then there was a few little telltale signs that these guys weren't exactly on the level.
Because this seems to be sort of a general theme in a way, in that a lot of these things that you kind of went into, you didn't overly realise the level of what
it's
was
not
happening.
That I didn't overly realise, I didn't care. He didn't ask me to do anything illegal particularly. He asked me to make sure he didn't get beaten up, so there's nothing wrong in doing that. Yeah. And then obviously it turns into something else over time and it goes from there, really.
Right. So touching on that then, so at this point you're still with your wife's family?
Well, we lived on our own, but we were in the same area.
Yeah. And when you were there in the first incident, you hated it. You hated it.
Yep.
How was it when you went back?
It wasn't as bad. We made quite a lot of money when we sold our house, so we had a bit of money kicking about. We were partying a lot, a hell of a lot. We were pleasing ourselves. So, yeah, it was all right. Yeah. It was all right. And then, obviously, when she got pregnant, we had slowed down a little bit.
Of course.
Then we bought another house, and then we had a kid.
Yeah.
And then we had no money, no sleep, stress. So, actually, driving around in a car with someone all day, stopping him getting his head kicked in for money was actually quite a nice thing to do, really.
Did you find sort of like an escapism there?
It was just easy, you know. It was easy money, because before that, well, when we first went back, I was doing some building work and things, and some proper dirty kind of quarry work and that sort of stuff. I ended up teaching full time. I think we touched on that before. So I was teaching martial arts full time, and then it allowed me to stop doing the dirty jobs. So instead of getting up and getting shitted up all day, stinking, grubby conditions, I was getting up, dressing well, going to work, getting paid for not really doing an awful lot, and then back in the dojo teaching martial arts in the evening. So it wasn't bad at all.
So what happens next? Where does the journey twist? Where does it turn next?
So it escalated from him onto a few other people that he knew. And it's the same as, you know, like I say, when I was in South Wales, people get to know you, they ask for favours, you know. I need this money bringing back, I need this doing. I ended up doing a bit of sort of security for some very low-end celebrity types. And then it developed from there into working with a few of the Premiership footballers. And then it just built up from there, really.
What kind of experiences did you have with that? How does a bodyguard for a celebrity work?
It depends on your celebrity. So with when we were working with these football lads, a lot of that was go out, keep them out of trouble, and you spent half the night trying to stop them from being dickheads and getting themselves in trouble. To other celebrities, you know, there was one guy, we used to pick him up from the airport, drop him at a hotel room where he saw his girlfriend, and then we'd fuck him straight back off to the airport. That happened a lot. His wife used to ring up and ask, was he at his girlfriend's house, which was a bit random. And then other times we'd be working with, you know, I moved on from doing the bodyguarding work to more, I don't know what we call it, a problem solver. So stalkers and pain, like, it went to a bit of a case of, like, people come up, we want a bodyguard. Well, why do you want a bodyguard? We've got this stalking issue. Well, I'll tell you what, pay me this much money, we'll make it go away. Right. Which was a lot easier than the bodyguarding work, and paid a lot more money than the bodyguarding work.
It's interesting, isn't it? Like with the, like you said about the footballers and stuff, you were there actually to protect them from themselves.
Yeah, we did one party. I can't give too much away, but we did a party for a, I think he was 23-year-old Premiership player. And we turned up at this proper shitty pub in the north of England. I mean, like a proper village shithole. And then at the back of the pub, there was a function room. We basically had a 30-man security team on this party. And we were taking everyone's phones off them and shit like that. And then in the party, there was half of, like, you know, the late night porn things. That half of those girls were in there. There was shitloads of other things going on. And we were just there to keep the public out and his lot in, basically. That was an eye-opener. I got glass that night, actually.
What, by one of the porn stars or
by somebody that was at the party, was giving the footballer a load of shit. He mouthed off and he threw a glass and he missed and he hit me in the back of the fucking head. And I didn't realise I thought it hit and not cut. And I went from McDonald's and the manager was giving me like proper weird looks. And I was suited up, I was a bit sweaty. And I remember going home at the door and my wife going, what the fuck? And I just got blood everywhere where he glassed me in the back of the head and it had opened me up. And I'd driven from far side of Manchester all the way back to where I was living, which was a good two-hour journey.
What, and you'd not noticed?
Well, I was sweaty because it was hot and I just thought I'd have been tapped. It wasn't deep, but it was enough that I'd bled everyone and looked like a bloody murder victim.
So I bet, like, you know, when you're doing stuff like this, and then, of course, as well, you're going back to your wife, who... was she scared at any point? Was she nervous? Did she worry, or did she just know that this was what you did?
To be honest, I think all that passed when I was a bit younger, you know, before I was doing that. You know, there was that time I got baseball battered and she helped stitch me up, and there'd been a few different occasions where things had happened and she'd had to play nurse, and another time I'd had some facial damage and I couldn't be asked to go back to the hospital, so she removed all the stitches, and so it was kind of old news, really.
I'm just trying to get into her mindset, but I suppose that if...
It was normally, what the fuck have you done now?
Yeah.
You know, roll of the eye, sigh, you okay? Are you in trouble with the police? No, right, do you want food?
And that was it, and that's...
That end of conversation.
And so that was sorted.
Well, when the kids were growing up, the amount of times the garden shed shells fell on my face and gave me a black eye or cut my eye or whatever was, you know, and it's quite funny because at the time we thought they believed us. It turns out they didn't believe a word of it. It's like another time I got stabbed in the head there. That's what that scar is there. And we told the kids the garden shed shells had dropped. And then I overheard my son telling his grandmother I'd been stabbed in a street fight. So,
wow. What made you step away from that? What was after the, you know, the sort of celebrity bodyguarding? You know, because a lot of people, as much as, like, you know, yeah, okay, you're getting hit in the back of the head with something, you're still quite an eye-opening job. And I can imagine there were some celebrities that it was quite nice to work for.
Some of them are all right. On the whole, I've not, like I said, I've not met a happy celebrity yet.
You haven't actually said that. You've never met a happy celebrity.
No, God, no.
In what respect do you... why do you think they're unhappy?
It's shit. They can't go anywhere because people bother them. Everywhere they go, they're under the microscope all the time. They're paying out a shitload of money to live the lifestyle they're living, and some of them don't earn as much money as it costs them to live their lifestyle, so they're miserable. A lot of them are skint. They literally can't go anywhere without people watching them, and it's just crap. You know, I've worked for a couple of big Hollywood A-list names, and they're just proper miserable all the time. They're either on gear or pissed because they can't cope with it. And the ones that do cope with it tend to be a bit batshit crazy.
That is so interesting.
I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
It all comes down, there's this question, isn't there, of what is success? How do you measure what success actually is? And half of the time, it's never what you have in your vision.
A lot of them are really fame hungry to the point where they, you know, they're so obsessed with it all. And like I said, you know, they're not getting what they want from anything. They can't do anything. You know, they can't just go out you know, you have a bad day, you nip down the pub for a quick pint or whatever, or you just go for a walk. You can't do that. A lot of these people can't do that without being hassled.
And being lonely, I suppose, yep. as well.
Don't trust anyone. Don't get followed everywhere. It's shit. I wouldn't do it.
So that's made me have like a whole new sort of perspective on things, but it is right.
Well, I used to joke around before because one of my mates was like on about these A-listers and this and that, and I've met a few. The happiest ones are like your soap opera stars in this country, because over here they've got the fame and the name. It's fine. They're earning reasonable money. They're not earning big money, but it's enough. And then they fuck off abroad. No one knows them. They're fine. Where these big A-listers can't go anywhere without people giving them shit.
But then you look at that, there is some of them though that will always, like you say, want more and be eager for more because
until I get it.
Because the timeline or society will say to them, where's your next step? Don't give up. Where's your next thing? Instead of literally just taking a stance back and going, but look at what I have achieved.
Yep.
Do you ever do that? Do you ever have the opportunity to look back and just sort of go, do you know what? Look what I have achieved. Look what I have done.
I'm too busy just trying to wake up the next day, to be honest.
Yeah. Is that still how your mind is then now? Like, do you feel like you're fighting every day?
Like I said, it's just ups and downs, isn't it? You know, some days better than others, but I'm all right.
So with the celebrity side, what did happen next then? Where did we go? Where did Conrad's life go?
Went from that, ended up doing a really shit film in Leeds. I was looking after a producer, and they were doing some fight scenes, and they were shit. They were really bad. Long story short is I was quite vocal about the fact they were shit to somebody else without realising I could be heard. He asked me why they were shit. I told him. He asked me, could I do better? I said no. He sent me on with the camera crew back to where I was living and asked me to do a couple of fight scenes for this movie with some of my students from my karate club, which I did. Ended up doing a load of stunt work.
Amazing! They are the twists and turns of where life takes us. Can we say what the film is, or does that no?
Well, I don't know, so I'm not going to. I don't think though, because there was two. One of them wasn't released yet, and the other one I hope never gets released. It was really bad. The trailer looks like a student project. So,
but you did it all this time. Then you know this is going on in your work life, and I think I don't know. As far as I sort of see, there was. In your head, did you ever have like a master plan? Was there ever, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I want to achieve? Or was it just a case of, this is taking me now and this pays for this or what?
I wanted to teach. That was my thing. I wanted to teach martial arts. Yeah.
And when we've touched on this in the past, in previous episodes, you've always said that has been like your outlet. It's been your comfort zone in a way. It's been your thing that is you.
It was, and I was quite successful as a teacher. A very big, very, very big karate school. Success on the world stage, you know, we took students to the world championships, cleaned up, did very well with it. And then it just changed.
What changed?
Having to make the mortgage payments off my students every month, and it turning into a business made it not something I wanted to do anymore. I can be quite an unreasonable person if I want to be, and I'm very set in my ways. And what happened then is I had to change the way I was teaching and behaving with my students to appease certain people that were coming into my classes to make money. And I didn't want to do that. Like, I had to take a lot of kids in. And a lot of the kids from the area where I was living are very overprivileged, spoiled kids. And then you get, like, the parents that have watched a couple of classes, and there was a couple of guys in particular that really got to me by the end of it. You know, they'd watch and there'd be a running commentary over my shoulder the whole time I was teaching, to the point I had to ban them from coming in. So that got to me, and there was a few different things going on, and it got to the point where I couldn't deal with this bloke. His kid was great, but he was an absolute dickhead. So in the end, I said something quite loudly, which didn't help. And then I started to realise there were more of these spoilt little fuckers in my class than people I wanted to teach. And I worked it out, and if I carry on doing it as a business, I'd have to swallow the way I was teaching and bend to them a little bit or sack it off. So I sacked it off. You know, the stress of running it as a business, We got used to a certain lifestyle, wasn't dealing with people very well, changed my whole personality. I'll be straight with you, I ended up ODing. Sacked a class off. Felt really, really, really stupid after. Got horrendously drunk, took a shitload of tablets, made myself very, very ill, and realised that actually this isn't how I'm supposed to do things. So I stopped it.